And he tells a lot of stories there, but he disguises the names. So. He didn't know it wasn't any, I'm showing him, I suppose, for libel. But he wrote it very good. And but the there were characters enough. You ever hear of the Cowteam Road?
No.
Well, that used to be one of the ways we went to Island Falls.
Mm-hmm.
It goes down by the railroad station and down through the woods, and comes out over on the number 2, and then we went into Island Falls, that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that road got its name down on the last farm on this Cowteam Road was Silas Coben's.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty poor, and he drove a team of cows. He built a wagon that was fearfully and wonderfully made. It had sawed off logs for wheels, and he used to come up into the village here with this team of cows, and then he'd go home at night and sit down on the pole of his wagon, pardon me, and milk his cows, you know. And
they not only drew the wagon, but they also supplied the milk.
Yes. And he was quite a character. He had a son who was also quite a character. He was kind of half wild. He'd go off in the woods, and just to be in the woods, travel around, hunt, and he'd build him a camp somewhere, and sometimes he'd get someone to guide. And he had 3 boys. I don't know what ever became of his wife, but I never saw or heard of her. But he had these 3 boys, and they lived in a little house right next to us. And he'd go off and leave them there indefinitely, you know. And they took care of themselves and went to school. And one time of my sisters went over there to see how they were getting along, and she found they'd found some powder that had been wet. And one of them had this powder in a frying pan on the stove, drying it out. And he was bending over it, stirring it, and it went off. And just went all, burned his whole face, the hair off and everything. He was in pitiful condition. And he was a little red-headed, freckle-faced one. And my sister took him out to the doctor and made him fix him up. He came back all bandaged up so he could just see his eyes. And quite a remarkable recovery. When they took the bandages off, his skin was just as white and smooth as a girl's, you know. And all his freckles are gone. I don't think they ever came back. But those boys, they all did very well. Now, you talk about the environment determining what happens to a boy. You couldn't imagine any worse environment than they had. But one of them was a newspaper man, finally. Owned his own newspaper at one time. Another one had the camp up on Rockabini, sporting camp. It was a very prosperous place. And the third one was had quite a reputation as a wood carver.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was there was the man who used to drive this, what we call the North Pole stage. It went to Fort Kent. Went to Ashland anyway. I think made one trip a week. And carried the mail and any passengers and express he could pick up. And he was coming down one time, a hot day in the summer, and crossed the Crystal Stream up here, up on the Rooster Road.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's up just out of Paddington, a little way. And there was quite a nice little pool just below the bridge there. And that water looked so nice. He pulled his horses outside the road and undressed and put his clothes on the back of his buckboard and went down there and having a fine swim, you know, in that nice cool water. And the horses were browsing in the brush beside the road. They got into a hornet's nest. And they took off at high speed.
Clothes and all.
His clothes and all. And the year after him, ran down the road and stark naked, and the horses going down up the Bumpus Hill on the dead run, and everyone he saw, the people looking out the windows to see what was happening, he'd say, "Have you seen them? Have you seen them go by?" And I don't know where, how he ever caught them. I suppose they finally got tired out and stopped. And he got his clothes back. There was a Hunter Davis. You may have heard something about him. He's been dead, though, quite a while now. He was a hermit. He lived in here alone. You know, quite common to have around here in the woods, men, they call them woods queer. For some reason they've taken to the woods and stay there. I've known quite a number of them. But this man wasn't exactly woods queer. They weren't really insane. But they got to suspicious of everyone. They were didn't want you to come around the camp, and
maybe they were more sane than most of us.
Yes, Yes, and they had different reasons. Some of them get away from alcohol, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some probably get away from their wives. And some just because they like to live in the woods, be alone. And but this man, we never found out just why he took to the woods. He lived in Lincoln, and he went to California in 49 and came back there. And the story is that he had been in love with a foster child. His parents, they hadn't adopted her, they'd just taken her in. And they wanted to get married, and his father wouldn't stand for it. They claimed her as a daughter. And the story is that when he came back from California, he found that his father had intercepted his letters, and she had never heard from him. And, one version was that she had married someone else, and another one is that she had died. And, but anyway, he had some trouble with his family, and he just picked up and took his rifle. He had a new Winchester rifle, one of the very first Winchester repeating rifles ever made. And he came with his knapsack on his back and came up here from Lincoln and went in, and there was a tote road, what they called the Jerry Pond Road, went back into the woods around the end of Shin Pond. And he went in there on the shore of Shin Pond and built him a camp and cleared up a little farm there. It wasn't much of a farm, it was nothing but a pile of rocks on the side of the hill, you know. But he cleared up quite a place there, and there was some land that was fairly good. And he raised corn and some vegetables and things there, and trapped and hunted, and lived there for years. And he wasn't a recluse. He was interested in everything happening out here. He belonged to the debating club, and he'd come out here 10 miles on his snowshoes probably,
mm-hmm.
and go to this debating club and take part in it. And well educated for the times, probably went to Lincoln Academy and something. And he made him a violin he used to play on some. And he wrote poetry. He left a whole pile, a big package of manuscripts, poetry he'd written, you know, about on the pattern of Elizabethan poetry.
Mm-hmm.
He was well read, and some of it was real poetry, and some of it was just doggerel, you know. And the beaver were all trapped off at one time, and so his He used to go away in the winter and find himself an old lumber camp or something and fix up a lean-to in that and have an open fire in front of it. And he'd live in that lean-to camp with it all open to the sky, you know, in front. And he got pretty feeble. And some of the people used to look after him, my father and this Scribner family. And they finally persuaded him to sell off some of his frontage. Of course, he didn't own the land, he just squatted on it.
Yeah.
But he'd lived on it for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
undisputed possession, and so he had a real squatter's title.
Mm-hmm.
And so father and someone else went in there and surveyed lots along the shore, and he sold those out. He offered them for $5 a piece at first, and people who wanted to buy them, no one really wanted lots down there because it's inaccessible, no way of getting there except by boat. And they persuaded him that he ought to get more than $5 for half an acre, you know. And so he finally took $10. He sold off quite a few of them. And my father bought one lot and built a camp on it. And then as the children got older, they bought lots, bought up some of these lots that had been sold. And we have a family camp there now, some 6 or 7 camps. And those lots are assessed now at $1,000 a piece. $1,000 for an acre lot. And but he lived there alone. He had some wild animals he'd tamed, and he had one time, you know, he had a pair of beavers, young beavers, and some men going in there fishing in that tote road, and they went by his camp, and he wasn't there, but he had a camp, a dugout. It was down, almost all down below ground level, just a roof above ground, and right beside the tote road. And that when they came back that afternoon, there'd been a heavy thunder shower, and a good-sized brook was running right down this road, and down his camp, it took off the road and ran right into his camp.
Mm-hmm.
So that was full up and overflowing. And these beavers were worked like beavers, damming up all the holes where this water would run out. And someone went in there one time in the winter, and they found him almost starved and frozen to death, you know. And they rushed him out and put him on the town farm. And he was a state pauper. He lived on wild land, you know, and didn't have any residence in any town. And but the state paid his expenses at the town farm.
Mm-hmm.
And East did live there for 2 or 3 years. And then they took him into the last farm on the road. And they had some camps there for hunters. And they put him in one of these camps, and his family took care of him. He was totally blind then, and he died there after 2 or 3 years, over 90 years old.
Well, thank you very much for a chance to talk to you this afternoon. I've rather enjoyed it. And I suspect one of the most interesting characters I've heard from about this afternoon is you. It's been very interesting chatting with you. You've had a rather long and full life, and have also a remarkable memory.
Oh, I remember things that happened 75 years ago, but yeah. Things that happened last week I have a good deal of trouble with.
Thank you very much.